the USMLE. They're obsessed with stuff like when to do a Holter monitor. Okay, now I'll try to make this as concise as possible. When we talk, because you asked about stroke, and this is kind of the crux of it, which is when you have a patient who has a TIA, a stroke, or a retinal artery occlusion, you want to think, okay, is this an embolus coming from the left atrium, or is it an embolus coming from the carotid arteries from plaques that are there? If the vignette gives you hypertension, and it can even be mild hypertension, I've seen ranges, and they'll say usually someone who's a bit younger, like fit in their 50s. Next best step in management, carotid duplex ultrasound. Because you say, well, the hypertension is going to cause the carotid plaques. Patients a bit younger, we are saying how atrial fibrillation is common, usually around 80, age 80. Now, if they give you a vignette where they say 78-year-old man and his blood pressure is 110 over 70, you're like, well, there's no way in hell it's a carotid plaque because his blood pressure is great. And he's old. That means he's probably going to have AFib because 8% of people over age 80 have AFib. So you would do an ECG. And then they'll sometimes even be trickier. They'll tell you in the last line, they'll say ECG is normal. ECG shows sinus rhythm abnormalities. You're like, what the fuck? Answer is Holter monitor that you're going to do next because atrial fibrillation is often paroxysmal, meaning he's normal when he's in your office, but he's going to go home, have dinner, and he's going to switch into AFib for a half an hour. Okay. They talked about at our school, this is like a famous thing at my medical school, where they said how they had a patient for one of their residence level exams who had actually had paroxysmal AFib and they didn't know. And he like switched into AFib and how like it caused one of the residents to have a problem with the exam. Like how they said, like the resident reported that the patient had AFib and they were like, no, he doesn't. And then they checked and he did. And they're like, wow, that's fucked. Yeah. So there's they make a point that like patients with AFib paroxysmal oftentimes. Now that's the stroke stuff when it comes to carotids versus AFib, okay? But USMLE also wants you to be aware of acute mesenteric ischemia for AFib. So they'll tell you someone with history of AFib now has severe abdominal pain that's out of proportion to the physical exam. Mm-hmm. That's acute mesenteric ischemia. Mm-hmm. And you'll simply do arteriography as your next best step to identify the location of the embolus. And then they require usually laparotomy if they're becoming unstable and they're going to have necrotic bowel. And that's more surgery stuff. But they want you to be aware of acute mesenteric ischemia. There's three ways acute mesenteric ischemia presents. One of them is atrial fibrillation with a clot launching off. The second way is an episode of ventricular fibrillation, where they'll say patient had hypokalemia causing ventricular fibrillation. He was defibrillated. He's now sinus rhythm, but there's severe abdominal pain. So it's the episode of ischemia that precipitated the acute mesenteric ischemia, whether it was the lack of blood flow or whether it was literally from the embolus causing the obstruction. The third way is going to be a patient who has chronic mesenteric ischemia, like in diabetes. Chronic mesenteric ischemia is when they have heavy atherosclerosis of the mesenteric vessels, where they get abdominal pain an hour or two after eating a meal. And you're like, oh, it sounds like a duodenal ulcer. The difference is duodenal ulcer is going to be a 29-year-old dude from Indonesia with H. pylori, whereas chronic mesenteric ischemia is going to be 69-year-old man with diabetes and history of coronary artery bypass grafting. Okay. Mm-hmm. And so they'll tell you chronic mesenteric ischemia, that in and of itself is a high yield diagnosis. And then they'll say he now has a 2-day history of severe abdominal pain. 2-day, not even 2-hour. They'll say like 2-day history of severe abdominal pain. And that's essentially the equivalent of an MI, but of the mesenteric artery, like mm-hmm. superior mesenteric or IMA. Got it? Mm-hmm. So you can get a ruptured plaque there. Those are the three ways I've seen mesenteric ischemia on the step. And that's super, super, super high yield for you. Mesenteric ischemia. And you do arteriography, as we said, next best step. And if they ask you for a surgical intervention, you're going to choose laparotomy. And acute limb ischemia. So they tell you, like, some of the atrial fibrillation has absent distal pulses. And that's acute limb ischemia. And you're going to do heparin, oxygen, and morphine for that. It's a bit of a weird treatment, I know. Because you're like, heparin, really, for arterial? Yeah. I've also seen a weird heparin question for arterial when it came to... They told you someone had a posterior stroke, and they said that there was a false lumen visualized in the vertebral artery, okay? And the answer was heparin. And it's just a very weird combination. And you're like, okay, can you explain that a little bit more? Sure. So apparently, if you have a false lumen occur in an artery, that can be a space for stasis, right? Where you can get a clot forming. So if you get a symptomatic patient who gets a stroke following a stasis event from a false lumen in an artery, that patient needs heparin. Cautiously, of course. Like you know, obviously if it's a hemorrhagic stroke, you would never give that. But just, I've seen that. That's on one of the forms, whether it's IM or surgery, I don't know, but it's on one of the NBME forms.